Oh, thank you. Since the state hasn't paid us.
It was nothing.
Oh, my God.
My mom wants it up, Rich.
Good evening. We're almost there. Yeah, I'm almost
done. No, less than that.
How are you?
Hey.
How you doing?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Just think. Just a few more short weeks till you get abused.
Oh, yeah.
Why wait?
Why wait?
I'm going to have to get some new shoes so I can move fast.
Get a disguise. What is this
going to be? Just under public, general public comment.
Okay. 7 o'clock.
Okay. Call the meeting to order. Would you guys all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sorry, Brian.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Roll call, please, Carol.
President Graves.
Here.
Vice President Simon.
Here.
Director Dawson.
Here.
Director Pifo.
Here.
Director Tatro.
Here.
Being adjourned.
Great. Public comments. I have a yellow sheet here from Jeff Barber. Mr. Barber.
Pass that down to me.
Yes.
Where can I get a yellow sheet?
As I've done in the past three times or so, either verbally or in writing or both, towards the end of the year, I've made some comments to this board, suggestions related to how I believe going forward into the next year, the town could better itself with respect to better operations and handling certain matters in a more conventional way. So I'm going to revisit some things I've said before and maybe add a couple new things. It's no surprise that I'm going to start out with my once again saying that I believe this town needs a plan, a vision statement. Call it whatever you want, but something that's written down, something that's communicated, that's available for the public to look at, something that's updated on an ongoing basis, and that it encompasses everything that this board and this town is all about. And I know some people sitting up there have said it can't be done, or maybe you said it shouldn't be done. And I think that's either an answer that is based on never having done it or never having operated an enterprise. Yes.
You mean a mission statement?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I mean a plan with some level of detail, specificity.
Why your plan or something like that.
And I think it could take many shapes, forms, or names. Yeah. Call it a vision statement. It can encompass things that you're directly responsible for and things that you want to influence this town. And I think it needs to be written in a living document that people can access and see and comment on and have input on. Secondly, and it goes along with that, is better financial planning, something that doesn't happen once a year in a big-time scramble, whether you think you did a great job or not. This year, that doesn't matter. It can be done different and better, and there are state guidelines for these type of organizations. I'm not sure you've met those, and I do believe that you can do a lot better job and make that also an ongoing and better communicated process with periodic updates and reviews, and not just something that happens once a year. Communication in general, I think a president's newsletter is imperative on a monthly basis or so. I think signage to let folks know what's going on when there's something special going on. I think one of the reasons we failed as a community in that fire thing is because people didn't know you had that special meeting. I know for a fact that big signs around this town are the most effective way to get people into a meeting. It's a fact. If you don't believe me, then that's too bad, but it's a fact. I think the town needs to accept that. Something new I haven't spoken about specifically is I think the town needs to approach the sewer specifically, but the sewer and water responsibility with a new program. Again, call it what you want, I'll call it. I've seen it called, them called Standards of Excellence. This town, this operation is a terrible polluter. If you look at the state's key performance indicators, one in particular puts this town in the bottom 5%, or one of the worst polluters out of almost 700 sewer operations in the state. you know, you can deny it all you want, but this town has dumped more sewage into the water than the town of Long Beach. Can you imagine that in recent times? You know how big Long Beach is? That's amazing. You need standards of excellence. When something happens like it happened in June, a cursory review or whatever, a vendor review of what happened isn't enough. You are stewards of the environment, and you need to make sure it never happens again. You've got to go above and beyond. And you can't sit here and say, well, spills happen. They're going to happen. People spill more. There's 100 spills today. That doesn't matter. You need a standard of excellence that says this town is not going to spill, and you need ways to get there. And I'm not making this stuff up. Organizations involved with health and the environment do this all the time. This town needs to do it, in my opinion. The last thing is, I think you need to seek and utilize an independent counsel when you get into some of the stuff that was involved with the auditor's recent report. You can't just dust it off. It's not going to go away. There's stuff in there that you got legal advice on at the time, maybe, maybe not. You need an independent counsel to guide you through this. And I think that's important. And I think it's going to dog you and bite you continually until you accept that and move on and get it taken care of. Thank you.
I have a request here from Mr. Bud Kyle, please.
Thank you very much. I've got just two things I need to talk to you about. First of all, I'd like to thank the gentlemen that got reelected here. I put on our new man, and welcome and good luck. David,
thank you.
I want to thank you for all the work you've done past years. What was it, 11 years?
A long time, yes.
Long time.
Thank you very much.
Seems a lot longer.
Some days longer than others.
Anyway, I got just two things to talk about. And again, it's a matter of letting people know what they're doing. I don't know how many of you are aware of this or not, but the lake outside of the clubhouse is the biggest mess I've ever seen, and we've had that there for almost a year, and nobody has done a thing to it. I asked somebody on the board, I can't remember who, and they said, the state's in charge of that. We have nothing to do with that. I saw the guy down there with a deal taking licks and everything. I went and talked to him. No, you're talking to the wrong guy. We're not in charge of that. Anyway, it's junk. It's terrible to have all that green foliage and stuff. It's there. And someone said, well, you can't, it's attached to the bottom. It's not attached to the bottom because in the morning, it's over here, and in the afternoon, it's over on this side. And nothing in the paper, nothing from anything, from the board that we saw, nobody has been doing anything about it, and somebody should be doing about it. And if the state's supposed to be doing about it, then talk to the state. But don't leave all these people. My neighbors, I tell you, they're just absolutely disgusted with the whole thing. And I don't blame them, you know. We had a lot of money in our homes down there. Not worth anything now, but it may be someday. But we would really like to know what's happening and something to do. I noticed out in the lake by the boats out there and everything, people were out there. I don't know what they were doing. They were pulling the stuff out, putting it in the bag to pick up. Next thing I read in the paper that someone dumped it somewhere. But at least someone was trying with it. But I just really wish that someone would get on that. I think it's very necessary. Another thing that I've been noticing here over the last few years that I've been here is the coordination that we have between the different entities. I don't even know how many entities we got out here. They pick up the paper and you're talking about this group is having this problem and this group. You don't know who they are or what they're doing. There doesn't seem to be any correspondence or anything between all of the groups. It seems like we could have a representative from each one of the groups on a board or something that meet once a month or once every 6 months or whatever you think is necessary. But I think that there's a lot of things to do. I just got my report from our area up there, and It's really nice to have. It tells us exactly where our budget is. It tells us everything you've done, what our reserves are. It was really very nicely prepared, and it was really informative. And I really think that was great. You know, we live in the best city in the world, so let's don't screw it up, huh?
Could I ask you just a question for clarification, because I'll try and follow up on it? The you said the lake outside the clubhouse?
Right across the street from the clubhouse. On the, if you went down across the street, it would be on the east side.
On the east side, okay.
And by the way, the thing, other thing I don't understand is why so many of the other lakes don't have anything in it. Mm. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm not quite
sure. Go there.
Is it referring to the Delta or
no,
inside
the
country club?
Inside the country club. The Rec 800 may have a little.
They run the water through
yes.
It, yeah.
Any other public comments?
Hi. Sorry. My comment's sort of a question, I guess. I've seen a couple instances where I send a communication into the board. Public records request or something else, and it is pops up, you know, Bob Mank and his appointee at Mary Pifos. It pops up on a website by him without any indication how he received the document. We had an issue come up last month, I think you remember, Rick, where I sent something and I asked it to be confidential, and it was up on the website, and you know, he altered it, which is, you know, his prerogative, I guess. But my concern is that I'm sending it into the board, and somehow some people have access to information that's extraordinary to that of the other citizens. I don't, you know, I'd like to know who on the board sent it to him. I know Rick didn't do it. I know Kevin didn't do it. I know staff didn't do it. I'd like to know who did it and why. And whether or not that is reasonable. Because in my mind, if I'm sending something to the board and the director sends it to someone else and skirts the procedures for providing documents to the public, they're giving that person an extraordinary level of service. And frankly, I'd like that same level of service if it's going to be afforded to Mr. Mankin. So can I find out who sent it on to him? Wasn't you, right? Wasn't Mark? Wasn't Kevin?
Wasn't me?
Wasn't Brian?
Yeah, I forward everything. They're public documents, Don. Anything that comes into this board is a public.
That's what I'm trying to get at, is what is the process for providing public documents? I've been led to believe I need to file a request.
Yeah, I have a request filed with me personally, if you're just to answer your question.
Okay. Can I submit a request with you for provision of documents?
You sure could.
Well, you know, I have done that, as a matter of fact, with regard to the community center, and you refuse to send me the documents.
It's my choice.
Well, okay. Obviously, it doesn't take, I'm sure everybody in the room, except a couple people, understand that that's not fair, that you have somebody that's on the board deciding to provide those documents to somebody outside the norm and refusing to do it for other citizens. So I guess, Kevin, what's the proper way to deal with it?
You know what, Don, at this point in time, I don't have an answer to your question. Up until just now, I didn't know who had released any information. And again, it is all public record. But secondly, this is a time for comments on your part more than it is a Q&A.
Okay.
And so I appreciate your comments and I understand your concern. Don't know if I can solve the problem.
Fair enough. Thank you.
But it is a problem.
Or the concern.
Right.
Any other public comments? Okay. Moving along. Do we have any presentations?
None.
Okay. Chair report and director's comments. Any comments from
Yeah,
Go ahead. Director Simon, do you have something that you want? We're going to start with director's comments and then go to chair report. I'll go last. Ray, do you have anything?
Yeah. On the lake thing. Is he going left?
Yeah.
Never mind.
If you yelled really loud.
Okay.
Nothing else.
Director, thank you. Director Simon?
Thank you. I'd just like at this time to take just a moment to clarify a statement that I made at the October 20th CST meeting. At that meeting, I apologized to the residents of Discovery Bay because I believed that all residents should have been informed of the spill that took place on June 22nd. Not just the people who were affected by the spill and not those who lived in the immediate surrounding area. What I would like to clarify is, at no time during my statement did I ever say or imply that the CSD board violated any regulations or rules or the Brown Act, and at no time did I say or imply that the CSD board broke any law. The tape of the minutes of the October 20th meeting will confirm my statement. Thank you.
Director Dawson, any comments?
No, thank you.
Director Pifo.
Yeah, quick one. I wasn't planning on it, but since Mr. Flint addressed the board, and I think it would be a great time to comment. It's my understanding, unless legal counsel would alter what I have to say, that, first I find it very odd that Mr. Flint, who loves to preach transparency, has a problem with anything that he sends in as a public document. Anything that comes in becomes a public document. He who maintains a website on this CSD and has all kinds of stuff on his website published about this board and specific board members, I kind of see that as the pot calling the kettle black. However, it's my understanding, and I direct this down to legal counsel, that any document that comes into the board that's not attorney-client privilege is just that, a public document, and we certainly can share that with any constituent that has an interest in business of the board.
Well, there are other documents that aren't. I think what the director's referring to is any document that's transmitted to a board member is a public record, and the board member may disseminate that record as the board member desires.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Yep.
Okay.
That'll do it.
I don't have any comments this evening. I don't believe we've been to any meetings since the last.
Just by.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just
go.
Sorry, I'm ignoring Brian.
Great job.
And so we will move on to the consent calendar.
I will make the motion that we approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any comments from the directors? Not much on that tonight. Any comments from the public? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
Let the record reflect 4 positive, 1 abstain. New business and action items. Item 1.
Excuse me, can I ask a question, please?
Yes.
Should the record reflect that Director Pifo abstained?
Okay. Yes, actually, it should reflect that Director Pifo abstained. Thank you. New business and action items. Mr. Howard.
The first item before you tonight, we have 3 items under action items. The first one is an agreement between the town of Discovery Bay and essentially U.S. Bank for participation in what's referred to as the CalCard program, which is administered by the state of California's General Services Administration. The reason this became necessary is because we've had an account, a Visa card with Capital One Bank for the past 10, 12 years since the district's inception. And that card was established benevolently by Virgil Caney, and it's actually it's partially in his name, so we need to get it out of his name is really what
I believe he personally guaranteed it at some point when we started it up.
There was nothing
when we had no credit.
We had nothing at the
right.
time.
Right, right. Sure. Right.
And
no
he established it with his own personal credit. Mm-hmm. It is in the town's name. We do get the bills here. They are closely monitored. They do not go to his home or anything like that. But it's appropriate to remove that and to put us on a separate independent account, if you will. CalCard is nice in the sense that it provides, one of the biggest benefits is it gives us 45 days to pay the bills instead of the standard 25 that we currently have. And with our payment process system, we sometimes get hit with late charges because of the timing of the invoices.
Sure.
And that this gives us the opportunity to avoid those types of charges. We get a quarterly rebate. It's probably not going to be too much, but we don't have a high spending volume based upon spending. But one of the things that I'm really that I really like about it, and I've utilized it before, is the fact that we have employees that drive town vehicles, and they have the vehicle, they have their Capital One card presently, and they're carrying with them for gas and oil changes and that sort of thing. Well, we can now restrict the card to only fueling stations, certified, specialized auto repair facilities, tire places. They can't just go into a grocery store,
liquor store,
anywhere and buy stuff.
My understanding, you can even restrict it to fuel only, and so they can't even go to an AM/PM and buy food and put it on there.
And the nice thing about this,
not that they would,
the card is it has its own design to it, and so you move away from the comparison. If you carry more than one card in your wallet, you have the opportunity to say, oh wait, I pulled out the wrong card. And we have had situations in the past where employees use the card for personal business, brought to his attention or her attention, oh my goodness, I didn't realize it, look at my card, looks just the same, I have a Capital One card also. So I think this is the right time and the right place for this, and I'm looking forward to your approval. If you didn't have any questions,
any questions from the board?
No, make a motion that we approve this.
I think it's second that.
I think it's time for that little bit of housekeeping. Good job, Rick. Any comments from the public?
I'd second that motion.
Sorry.
That's right.
No comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
And just to clarify, that's resolution 2010-18, correct?
Carol?
I believe it is. Yes.
Okay. Number two, back to you, Mr. General Manager.
Thank you. This is a... before you this evening is an employee medical program that I've been working on for quite some time. It's been discussed with the board in prior closed sessions. It's appropriate at this time to have it see the light of day, to remove it from closed session as we're seeking an authorization this evening. The town of Discovery Bay has not had employee medical coverage for any of our employees since the inception of the district in 1998. We have 11 full-time, one part-time employees. Some employees do have medical. I currently have 4 employees that do not have any medical coverage at all. And so I'm recommending this evening that the district contract with SDRMA, which is a Special District Risk Management Association. We are a member of that association. They do offer through their list of services employee medical benefit program that includes medical, dental, vision, supplemental life, long-term disability insurance, life insurance, those sorts of things. And through discussions with the board, back to the SDRMA, one of the things that is beneficial for us being a member of their pool is that we get the benefit of being in a much larger pool. We would not be able to get that buying power if we went out and tried to purchase that ourselves. In fact, we looked at that 2 years ago, and for a comparable coverage that this board was looking at 2 years ago, was more than double the amount of money that I'm proposing this evening for the employee only. As I'm proposing it, this is only medical for the employee only. If the employee would like to add coverage for a spouse and additional family members, they can certainly go ahead and do that through payroll deduction. If they would like to add dental and or vision, they can do the same thing. The the way that the board would, the way that I'm proposing to the board is that no employee that is below a three-quarter time equivalent of an FTE would be eligible for it. So it's maybe three-quarter time or above would be eligible for it. And at a, and if there is someone who is below between three-quarters and 0.99, they would have a proportionate share of whatever the dollar amount would be. And in this case, it's proposed at $527 a month. There are some employees that currently already have medical coverage. They do have medical through spouses or through family members, and as such, they might not need the medical coverage. So I'm proposing this evening that those employees that already currently have medical coverage be allocated $250 per month to be as a contribution to their deferred compensation plan. And the reason that I propose that is due to the fact that an employee that already has coverage, if they were to go ahead, if we were to offer the coverage and they were to take that coverage, what could possibly happen, and I've seen it happen in the past, is that the employee, if there's not an incentive for them to stay off, this is the $250 is an incentive to have other insurance, would be that they would just go ahead and purchase the medical insurance as a supplemental to their existing medical. So it's costing more in the long run for the district to provide that service. Just as a comparison, Reclamation District 800, Bethany, Byron District, Mountain House, provide full, what I would refer to as Cadillac coverage plans, which is employee, medical, family, fully paid for, fully covered, medical, dental, vision. This is strictly and only the medical coverage for the employee only. Any other costs, any other additions are at their expense. It would come through payroll deduction. And the last thing I want to add to that is through when deductions are taken through payroll, for every dollar that comes out, the district would save 7% in Social Security taxes. The employees would save a little bit more because they're getting a reduction in income taxes as well. But it's a straight 7% savings to the district, which isn't going to add up to a lot, but over the course of the year, it could be several thousand dollars. It's not a big dollar amount, but it could be something. And based on my numbers, and I haven't spoken to everybody to ask them what their individual preferences will be, but just in conversations that I've had with the staff, it's my first look at it that the cost for the entire year would be approximately $55,000, and we have $52,500 budgeted in the current year for that. So I think that we've done a good job in meeting the budgetary with the needs of the employees, with the finances of the district. I think that that the employees and myself have been cognizant of that situation. So I'm hopeful that this evening the board will approve resolution number, I believe it is
2017-17.
If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
I just have a clarification, Rick. I want to make sure I understand. The money that we have budgeted that you referred to is for a six-month period.
That's correct.
And so you're saying that you're almost, so next year we should be, we're actually half of what we were intended to budget for the next fiscal year. Is that correct?
If you were to use, the intent was that the system, that the program would be implemented on January 1st. So the number 52.5 was established as
half a year.
So beginning July 1st of 2011, that number would have theoretically doubled based upon the program we put. And those were the numbers that were based upon, that number was derived based upon the original numbers that came out a couple of years ago.
Right.
And so we've gotten that way, way down because of the buying power of SCRMA. But yeah, it would have been $105,000.
Wanted to clarify that the number you were giving us was for a year, not for the 6 month that we. Any questions from the board? Brian?
Rick, how do we compare to other CSDs and besides just the water districts that you mentioned when it comes to health benefits?
Statewide, I think that there are 7% of the hundreds and hundreds of districts that do not offer medical benefits to their employees. Those are probably really, really small districts, maybe one or no employees that have just a contract staff, which is not uncommon. With respect to those in our general vicinity, I mentioned already Rec 800 Diablo. Diablo pays full coverage. The employee pays a dollar per month for full coverage, including family. Bethany Byron is 100% paid for family.
What's do you have the cost of what that program is, or is that?
Yeah, I do.
Just a couple of them.
Rec 800 is $1,200 a month. Diablo is, I'm sorry, hang on, I have it here somewhere. Diablo is up to between $1,300 and $1,457.
Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
One other question. In your opinion, I know this would be kind of difficult to answer, but do you feel that we've lost staff due to our lack of benefits?
I know for sure that since I've been here, we've lost one member of the staff, and I know I have another member of the staff who I highly regard that I would be concerned about. I will tell you, as much as I would like to say otherwise, I wouldn't necessarily make my decision based on that, but it is a factor. The person that left us was a good employee. We hated to see her go, but we have Carol in her place, so we're happy about that. But that was the primary reason she left.
Yeah. That's all I have.
David, did you have
any? I did. First of all, I want to acknowledge and thank you. This is one of the items, if I'm not mistaken, you were tasked with, and we talked about when you were hired, that we wanted to get this program up and running. I think we've seen some deficiency, that we want to be a good employer and a fair employer, and we've just taken a lot of time through the years building the district up where we couldn't really afford it, or it was a nice to have, but we just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the district is at a point now where we wanted to figure out a way that we could do this still at an affordable level. So I want to acknowledge tasking in with SDRMA was a very, very good move. And it is very difficult to compare this organization to any other because each one is a little bit different. But the comparisons are still valuable. But depending on the size, I mean, if you're looking at Central San, who might have hundreds of employees, or Rec 800, who might have two. The only thing I see missing from the report that would have been useful, but not a deal breaker, is when you talk about our 11 full-time employees and one part-time, it would have been good to see a breakdown, unless I missed it. Clerical versus out in the field, you know, what kind of employees are we talking? I get questions often. How many people does the CSD employ? So when we are going to be going back and telling people that we gave that the CSD is considering or executed health benefits, they may want to know really how to quantify that. One last comment, and my hat's off to our employees. Since I've been with this district, I have seen some of the most dedicated employees, very deserving. I realize the retention issue is probably one of the most important factors, but it's also about creating a good, safe, happy job site. And I've seen our employees go out of their way, everyone from Virgil to Callista to the newest employees, stay late, work hard. We don't want to be, as the railroad was known, as a cruel employer. I think we want to create a good atmosphere here so that we retain employees and that when they are here, that they go the extra mile.
Thank you, I appreciate that, and I will convey that to them when I meet with the staff tomorrow. To answer your first question, you've got one general manager, you've got two managers, you've got six clerical and or accounting types. You've got two workers in the field, one in water and one on landscape, and you've got one part-time maintenance worker.
Perfect. That's what I thought.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments from the board? Yeah. Comments from the public?
I do.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mark, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, Rick, I'm looking at this, and first of all, I am totally in favor of benefits for employees. I think we have great employees, and I'm, but I'm also looking at, for instance, I've talked to a friend of mine who owns a business that has about 50, 55 employees. Their contribution is about $385 a month per employee. My wife works for Pepe Material Handling, is a pretty good sized heavy machinery company. Their contribution is it's under 390, it's like 382 or 383. The employer contribution is most of that, she pays part of it. And I'm looking at $527. The people that I've talked to, and I'm not an expert in this by any means, that own businesses, all of them, their contribution is under $400 a month. I'm curious why ours is 527.
Are you saying that the employees pay that amount, or the employer pays that amount for their on behalf of their employee?
Yeah.
You know, it could be that they're in an HMO plan. It could be that they're in a higher deductible plan. Without taking a look at what they have, I'm not familiar with. I can't.
It's $750 is a deductible, and it's a copay on
the plan that I proposed this evening is a fairly standard PPO plan. It's not a low deductible plan. It's not a high deductible plan. It's pretty much right in the middle. It has a $500 deductible for in-network when you visit medical in-network. It has a $1,500 deductible when you go outside the network. If you stay inside the network, there's, I believe, a $20 copay. If you go outside the network, I believe it's 50% of whatever that service would be. And it's similar to that all the way down the line. So I think that as a PPO, and based upon what's out there and what's in the marketplace, without being really familiar with those types of plans, and I apologize, if you can show them to me, I can maybe take a closer look at it. But just looking at what's out there and knowing that SDRMA does have a fairly large pool that we can draw from. And so those are really low prices, and I haven't seen that. This is really one of the lowest I've ever seen for a PPO like this. I currently pay $492 for my medical, and some of you may be surprised, but I'm a member of ARP only because I get my medical through ARP. But my
you lie by your age.
My deductible, yeah, I did. My deductible is $1,500, and my copays are a lot more money and everything else. But the pool is massive.
Yeah.
The plan that I was a member of, it was $895 a month for a program very similar to this, but the pool was less than 50 employees. So it depends on the pool size and the type of plan. I don't think that answered your question, but I hope it gives a little bit of insight. Yes.
Anything else, Mark?
No.
David?
Yeah, I apologize for commenting twice on this. I know I was overlooking something. Mark, thank you very much. You reminded me of this. Obviously, and I'm not an expert, so I'm saying the statement as a question. There's employers that do this differently, where they say, okay, the employer is responsible up to X amount, and the employee can actually contribute more to buy that Cadillac plan. In other words, if we're setting a limit of what we're going to put out, $527 a month, let's say. Are there options in this for the employee? And I did look at it, I just didn't see it clearly. If the employee wants to ramp that up to a Cadillac plan, that would be my first question. My second one is a little more complicated, and it's what I overlooked, is legally, and we have non-represented employees, we haven't gotten to the unionization point yet, but if we were to say, I know, sorry. But if we were to do this, are we creating a benchmark that we can't go back on? In other words, let's say we found a better deal 6 months from now, because I'm interested in getting these folks some benefits. But let's say we found something different that actually works better, but it may cost them a little bit more, or maybe we're not contributing as much. Do we enter into any area of regressive, and I know we're not union, bargaining, or where we're running into IRS tax code? I know that if my employer tries to take anything away from us, they run into all kinds of problems with the IRS because we've already agreed at a certain amount. Is this an agreement between us and our employees once we say we pass this motion or don't pass it, and say, we're going to do this resolution, are we now locked in? That would be my question.
No, the first thing is under the community services district law, we can offer benefits to the employees. The second thing, you're referring to our memorandums of understanding, which are union contracts. This is not a contractual relationship. This is a plan that's being offered by the board, and the board may change that. If they adopt this plan tonight, they may change that plan in the future.
So there's a lot of, okay, thank you.
You can change the plan in the future, but correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. McGrew, but I believe once the board has voted to approve it, you would still, you can't unilaterally take it away from the employee. So it has to be negotiated in good faith. Yeah. And I would be your negotiator on behalf of the employees. And it is not uncommon for an agency, public or private, to reevaluate and reassess on an annual basis or on a every couple year basis the benefits that are being offered and see what the market rate is currently and go and change. And that's not uncommon at all.
Yeah, our employees are unrepresented, and they do not have the normal rights the union employee.
Right.
But basically, the only right the employees have is to express complaint and go through something similar to a grievance process,
right,
but not a formal grievance process that you have with established by MOUs with unions.
That's very helpful, and I just raise the flag for people to consider that, you know, we're in unprecedented times, and let's say we had budgetary problems, that probably won't happen. At some point down the line, you know, I would hate to see this be locked up so bad that there couldn't be some type of renegotiation or some latitude, because to me this is effectively a raise. While I think it's a good thing for us to do, it's now giving someone a $527 a month benefit that comes out of our budget, and if that needed to be negotiated at some point, it would almost be akin to going and saying, well, we pay you $20 an hour, but the board decided to knock that down to 18. You can imagine people would be pretty upset.
Mark? He had another question, if I can address it real quickly.
Yeah.
With respect to the opportunity to move up or down the scale,
right,
depending on, you know, plan A,
plan
B, plan C.
Right.
A la carte, thank you. Because we are under 50 employees, we do not have that opportunity. So what I did is I met with the staff, and we sat down, we discussed it, we went over the plan documents. I had them all, not really vote on it, but we all sat around the table and discussed it and came to a consensus and felt that this was the fairest program for the district financially, and yet provided the basic benefit for the employee.
Very good. Thank you very much for those answers. I appreciate it.
Director Simon.
Two things. What are you looking at as a waiting period for a new employee before they?
You know, that's a good question. Hadn't considered it. Generally, for new employees, they start right away on the medical plan. It's typically some of the ancillary things that you can't participate in, like
contributing 401k or something like that.
Things along those lines. Generally, once you start in, you're covered from the beginning. But that's certainly a board policy decision that is a legitimate question.
I know that every place that I've ever worked with was medical was a 90-day waiting when you came in.
It's probationary period.
Probationary.
Yeah.
That's because they didn't trust you.
Of course not. The other question I have is, in the event that this insurance cost just gets out of hand, and we're starting at 527, in 2 years it could be 627, it could be 750.
But
do we have some kind of a safeguard in here where we can go back in, and if it becomes necessary, where the employees may have to contribute to it? A lot of businesses have done that.
Well, what if you look at the resolution, it's drafted in a way that says that this is for calendar year 2011 only. We would bring it back next year for calendar year 2012, and the board, at your discretion, could leave it at 527, even if rates go up $100. And then the employee would be an additional $100 or whatever that number would be.
Contribution from
The employee. Okay. So the board can make that decision to limit it, cap it, whatever
right,
else.
There you go.
I didn't set an evergreen on it purposely because I know we discussed that previously.
Yes, Ray.
Yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to make a point of. We specifically discussed this when we were talking about this because we said we don't want to get, say we give them this and then every year goes up, right. We're locked into that. That's, no, we're not. We can, our decision is say we're staying at the 527, the plan is now 628. If you want to continue that, you have to add that. And the other thing was, I thought we talked, and maybe it still is, if the employee, say he has, where he's working now, he has medical, but he has no dental or vision, he can take those. And is that still the same, or did that change?
No, that the employee can still take the medical, the vision, the dental or the vision if they already have medical through their spouse, for mm-hmm. example. And thank you for bringing that up. What would then take place is that employee would only receive the $250 still, and that would be reduced from there. So let's say the dental and vision is $65, they would get $250 minus $65.
So basically, then what you're saying is they would be declining the medical, which would kick them into the $250, and then they would choose to take something else, and that would come out of that $250.
Yeah, the dental.
Very well said. All
right.
I wanted to know if that was still there, and that's good. Thank you.
Another question, Dave?
Yeah, another statement, and Ray, you hit the nail on the head. One thing that I'm seeing in other counties, especially with what's going on right now, is, and it's under Section 2 here, that not to exceed, but it literally is a cap, where the board is agreeing that we're going to cap this at, let's say, $527 or $550 or whatever, so that really for it to go up, and it may even be written in there, that if this begins to exceed that the responsibility of maintaining that insurance is on the employee, so that, for instance, counties and some special districts, when it comes back and they say, well, geez, this year health insurance went up to $900. Well, we have no control over that. What we do have control over is our budget. So I would, you know, I'm not going to be here, future boards, let's hope, know that there's some type of cap built in there, because really the escalating health insurance is killing a lot of employers, and that's effectively what, you know, what we're going to be looking at.
Excuse me. It will take an action of the board. I've set this up so that it will take an affirmative action of the board each year to reestablish the contribution for the employee. One thing I left out, I think I put it in the report, is I mentioned I have four employees that I'm aware of that currently do not have medical insurance at all. Those four would be required under all circumstances to have medical. They can't opt out of it.
Okay.
They have to have the medical.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
They can't opt out and have $250 contributed to their account.
Thank you, Brian.
They have to be, I mean, because it's in our best interest that they're healthy.
Thank you, President Obama. Appreciate that.
No, it's just a joke, right?
Of course.
Get that on tape?
Got that. Okay, any other questions? Yeah, I'll entertain a motion. I need to get comments from the public, but I entertain a motion.
I'd like to make a motion that we pass resolution 2010-17.
Second that motion.
Okay.
And adopt staff recommendation.
I will. Yes.
And adopt staff recommendation.
Okay, we'll do that.
Discussion from the public, Mr. Barber?
Thank you.
I've operated businesses large and small, offered everything from no medical insurance to pretty good programs, but never have I paid 100% of any employee's health benefits. I personally think that's wrong. Never have I done it, and I know the trend in business today is not to do that. I think it's a mistake to pay 100%. I think it's a mistake to only look at other CSDs or government entities as your comparison. Your comparison need be, I believe, the real world. And the real world is not moving in 100% for a health program like I saw you note. A trend is a higher deductible HSA account. And I think a more equitable approach, and when I say equitable, you know, you guys weren't elected by the employees here, you were elected by the community. And you raised the rates on the community, and this year's increase, 9% or so, as I recall, is being used to pay for this. And I think a more reasonable approach, unless you want to participate in the government creep that's all around us, where government jobs and government overhead is just going through the roof, if you want to subscribe to that, fine, but reality in the real world is that employees contribute, and HSAs with higher deductible plans are a very strong trend. So if you wanted, I think it would be more equitable if you pick a number, 75%, whatever, of a reasonable HSA plan, and that be the contribution. And if they want, or they would contribute over and above that, and if they're locked into one plan, and if they want the $500-some plan, so be it. But I think you have to focus on the real world, focus that this is being paid for by a rate increase. The rate increase, in my opinion, I mean, I think more rate increases are coming because you have infrastructure issues and you have regulatory issues and other issues where the people who live here are going to have to pay for that. This is one more thing. And doing something that isn't the norm. Everybody out here in Discovery Bay, I guarantee you, is not getting 100% health care benefits. So I think you need to keep that in mind before you vote. And if you do vote, you have to accept that this is government creep because it's not the norm in the real world.
You know, I have a comment on that, and that is that you don't have to come back up, Jeff. It's just a comment. It's not a dialogue. And that is that the real world is that we are a government agency. The real world is that we are a public sector. We're not private sector. So to compare ourselves to public sector makes complete sense. It makes sense on the wages that we pay these folks, which isn't high. It's not as much as it is in the private sector, typically, and we've done comparison with our employment things. I don't want to get in an argument. I'm just saying to say that we're making a decision based on a fantasy world instead of the real world isn't accurate because we're
I said the only comparison should not be other government entities.
Well, I
because as you compete for employees, as employees move around, they just don't move only to government entities. You have a
well, that's why
a
we
big
lost
pool
employees.
In the real
they
world.
Well, the private sector.
But you have to compare, and as I also said, and my key point is government creep is all around us. If you don't understand that, then I'm sorry, but it's there.
If I can just make a quick comment regarding the HSA account that Mr. Barber is referring to. Through Kaiser, for employee only, it's for an HSA account, it's currently $539 a month. Through Blue Shield, HSA PPO is $786 a month. I stand pretty firm and pretty confident with the $527. That's a good number.
It costs my wife's employer a lot more for an HSA account than it does for...
It's for something in here.
But anyway.
The one I was looking at is for something. I saw it right in there.
Any other comments, Mr. Mencken?
Yeah, I'm self-employed and had a couple employees, and unfortunately I have to tackle the health insurance monster every year. For whatever value in the data point, I share my employees at 100%. The few times I've worked for an employer, as opposed to being self-employed, I've been insured at 100%. In 9 years that I've been currently with Blue Cross, I've seen it go from 620-ish to this year, I'm paying on a monthly basis about $1,340 for a family of three. So folks that are working for nice big corporations and all this other stuff, or government agencies, whatever the case, that are not exposed to that annual increase aren't getting the full picture, but it's coming, I think. The projected cost increase on health insurance are 100% in the next 10 years. That's readily available data. So Ray brought up the issue of trying to lock in a number. I don't know if you can be quite that rigid, but if you think that you're going to just, it's completely up to the board, but something to keep in mind that costs are going to go up. You have a bigger pool than what I deal with as a small business owner, so you're somewhat isolated there, but you are going to have costs. I don't care what entity you are, how big you are, how small you are. Your costs are going to go up by probably something in line with 100% that's projected nationwide. So if you lock in a number now, you're putting the employees on the hook for that in a 10-year period if they're around that long. Or you may want to find something in the middle. It's just something to consider as you're going forward. You know, you're taking an action tonight you're not locked into for more than a year, but it is something you're going to have to tackle on an annual basis.
Thank you. Any other comments? Mr. Flint?
So it was mentioned that this was discussed in closed session several times, and my question is why? Why would it be a closed session item, the discussion?
You want to address that, counsel?
It was a matter of negotiations with unrepresented employees.
Ah, very good. So was there somebody negotiating on behalf of the employees and someone on behalf of the board? How does that work?
This is a small district. The way it works is the general manager represents the board, and he meets with the employees.
So in this case, the general manager is negotiating on behalf of the district, the town, the people.
Well, the district, the town, the people are represented by the board of directors,
right.
And he negotiates it.
And he's also an employee who's going to be covered under this plan.
That is correct, but he negotiates at the direction of the board.
Okay. You know, my comment would be that the employees really need to have access to medical insurance. It's a shame that they haven't had it thus far, and I'm glad that that's being done. I think it's critical. But I think there's a distinction between access to health insurance and fully funded health insurance. I think in the packet that I reviewed, I didn't see a comparison for this district for a Kaiser plan that would offer different levels of service, and I know they're available. And I'm a big proponent of HSA plans or HSA accounts and high deductible plans because it puts the patient in charge of trying to control their medical costs. And I think we've had years and years and years of patients having fully funded insurance, going in, paying their deductible, and using more medical services than they need. And I think it's important to try to put the decision-making process into the patient's hands. And I think to offer just one PPO plan is a mistake, and I think to fund it at that level is a mistake. I think funding in the level of $350, like Director Simon mentioned, would be great. It would serve all the purposes that need to be served, and the employees can have some skin in the game and be involved in that way.
Any other comments?
If I can address one of his comments,
okay.
If I may. SDRMA, this is a new program for them. At this point in time, they do not offer a Kaiser plan. We understand that they will offer one in the future. And so that's why it's not listed. The other comment I wanted to make was what I mentioned earlier with respect to Director Pipo's comments, was that there's not an opportunity because we don't have enough employees to be able to go up and down the list of different plans that are out there. We have to select a single plan through SDRMA just because of our small size. We are getting the benefit of the larger pool, but because of the smaller size, we're limited.
No, and I understand that. Just for clarification, I'm not suggesting that whatever you're going to do has to go through SDRMA. You could go to Kaiser and get a quote for the business. That's what I was suggesting. That's available to you.
David.
Yeah, I think there's, in any decision-making process, there's a million what-ifs. We could probably what-if this to death, and quite often we do. I'll throw this out there. I'm surprised no one's brought it up. It's my understanding that the directors are employees of the district, and I would ask if they're eligible
yes.
for this. The second part I would mention is that I'm aware of special districts in Contra Costa County that the board members are given lifetime medical for serving on the board. So there's certainly a spectrum. You know, I heard this governmentitis, certainly a spectrum, but I think, you know, I'm looking at the board and saying they're looking at this in a very reasonable manner on what's been presented, looking at the whole spectrum from one side to the other, and I think this is pretty close to the middle and pretty reasonable and rational. Thank you.
Okay, I think that was it from the public. I see no more hands. Any more discussion from the board? Motion has been made and seconded. I would now call for a vote of the board. All those in favor of approving resolution 2010-17, indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, there was four ayes, and Director Simon was opposed. Moving on to Veolia's report.
Nope.
Actually, we have.
I'm sorry, one more action item.
Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you, President Graves. This item is before you tonight. It's recommended the adoption of Resolution 2010-19, establishing a Town of Discovery Bay CSD General Fund. This became necessary with the approval at the last meeting of the lease agreement between T-Mobile Corporation and the town, as those funds are in restricted revenues. And we essentially need a place to park them. One of the things I want to make sure that everybody knows and understands is that just because they're general funds and can be used doesn't mean that they can't be used on the water side, the sewer side, the landscape side, the recreation side. They can be used for anything at the discretion of the board, legally utilized for the discretion of the board. Whereas you cannot take a sewer fund and use it to maintain parks and landscape, you can use a general fund to help support a sewer fund or a water fund or that sort of thing. So I think it's pretty self-explanatory, and if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer or address any of them.
Dave?
Yeah, thank you. I just have a question, and I think I'm fine with it. I was out of the country and I was unable to do the level of research that I normally would do. When we formed the CSD, and I was one of the architects of that, it was real clear that there were no general funds allowable. However, it's my understanding that if we're going to look at this, that we clarify that, because it's a pretty broad statement. In most cities or communities, that general fund is established from tax dollars that come in. What you're recommending here and what the board's looking at is a different, almost a hybrid general fund. In fact, I even wonder if we should call it a general fund. Because it's not only, as you mentioned, parking money from what I've read, but it's money that's not coming in from ratepayers. It's from external sources. And so we're able to create this fund that we can have a commingling, but only in one direction, only into the ratepayer funds that we have. We can't take money out and commingle them into the general fund, so to speak. So I have a good understanding, but knowing the history, how do we get that understanding out to the community? And am I clear in my understanding?
I wasn't here when the district was formed, but however, there were districts formed in the old days that had ad valorem taxes, mm-hmm. and that could go into a general fund. And under SB 135, 2005, mm-hmm. We have the latitude to establish general funds. The rule is, as you alluded to, is if you have an enterprise fund, you cannot use enterprise funds for other purposes. So this is, there is no legal impediment to establishing this fund. There's no legal impediment to transferring money out of this fund to other funds. I will give you an example. It's public record so I can discuss it. Mountain House's utilities are not self-supporting because it's a new district. Mm-hmm. In the general fund, Mountain House supports those utilities. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That is my understanding.
Any other comments from the board? Questions? Brian, any?
No.
Comments from the public? Mr. Barber.
How much money is anticipated going into this fund from the current source annually?
It's a $2,000 a month lease for the first year, so $24,000 in the first year, increased by 4% annually for 25 years. So if money was never removed from the fund and interest continued to draw, it'd be a couple million dollars at the end of its life.
And are there other sources of funds that you envision going into this?
Not at this time. I don't, we kick around the idea of the general fund, we talk about the community center fund. The community center fund, every time we sell a shirt or a license plate frame, that really goes into a general fund. We don't call it that. We've identified a specific, we've earmarked that, but it's that those money can really be used for anything. We've gone ahead and earmarked that. This is not doing that. It's giving the board the discretion to use it, whether it be in a shortcoming and along the water side, the sewer side, the parks, community center. It just gives the opportunity for them to utilize it in a discretionary manner.
And so would it be reasonable to consider that since there are, we call them whatever, MAC or AC expenses that this board incurs and has incurred, that those are, that fund be used first and foremost to pay those expenses, which have come from I don't know where in the past, before the funds are used for any other purpose. Is that a reasonable? Could you put a provision on the general fund that says that fund is first and foremost to fund obligations of this board that are not funded or should not be funded through ratepayer funds, and then anything left, which it sounds like there would be, could then be used otherwise?
Speaking for the board, I would say that at this point we're making no commitments to where those funds will go. We're just establishing a general fund, so when the first check comes in about 30 days, we have a place to put it.
Perfect.
That's all the commitment the board is making as the funds.
What I'm suggesting, though, is because there is this issue of MAC, AC funds.
That has nothing to do with the subject we're talking about here.
Okay, it could, if I'm asking the question. Could you put a provision on this general fund that says it is its primary purpose or its first purpose is to pay those expenses, MAC, AC expenses, and then anything else left could be used for the board's discretion?
That's not really a definition of a general fund to restrict it or to open it up that way. The funds could be used for that. Again, this will come back as part of the budgetary process. We're not going to get a lot of money in the next 6 months out of this, just because it's going to take them time to build it. We get a little bit when we execute the lease. And so we have a place to put the money, but it will come back as part of the budgetary process in the spring prior to the FY 2011 budget. And at that point in time, I think that might be the more appropriate time to discuss how those funds would be utilized.
So if that makes sense. My comment is then that before those funds begin to be utilized or in the budgeting process, however you choose to do it, that it be considered that that fund be the a primary source for the MAC AC expenses, which I think are important, but I also think have not been funded properly in the past.
Did you want to comment, Brian?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Rick a question based off something Mr. Barber said. Now, it's my understanding that once the tower is up, other companies can ask to put an antenna on it, right? And then we would negotiate a lease with them for space on the ground?
Yes, the T-Mobile can lease their tower space, mm-hmm. can sublease their tower itself, mm-hmm. But then we can lease ground space to Verizon, AT&T, mm-hmm. whoever else comes in and get additional revenues from them.
All right, thank you.
David?
Yeah, just again, some other points of clarification. The advisory part of this, the latent power, if you will, of this CSD, many of you are familiar, it happens all the time at the state level, of unfunded mandates. Basically, we're mandated to do that by the voters, by LAFCO, and by the Board of Supervisors. However, it was unfunded at the time. I think it would be a really bad move for the CSD to encumber its own funds when there's many laws, as legal counsel mentioned, SB 135, that regulates how those funds can be used. Funds are not used really in any shape or form unless it comes before the board in which direction to use those funds. So it is a moving target. I'm not real happy about the term general fund, but I can live with it. The other one is that, and I asked this or mentioned this to the general manager, In fact, indeed, one of our latent powers is recreation, which is, I believe, where we park the funds from the community center. It's the external stuff that we do, selling t-shirts, that we've been putting the money in there, or been putting it to. But that also, that stuff could go under direction of the board to this general fund. So, in other words, it's a one-way valve on some of this stuff. Some money has to stay parked where it's designated to under that latent power that the voters and LAFCO has approved for this board. But it's the extracurricular stuff, and maybe that's a bad word to use, but you know, whether it's the selling of products or there may be other cell towers, other people that want to lease or use our property, that this gives it the vehicle for that to be accomplished.
That's correct. The other thing it does is part of our latent powers gives us the recreational opportunity to explore. And we can't use any of our funds that we currently have for that type of a program. However, you could use these funds to start a recreation program, softball leagues, baseball leagues, basketball, soccer, you know, whatever. You could use some of these monies to help kick those off.
Basically unrestricted funds. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Any other comments from the public?
I just have a quick comment. And this isn't a super big deal, but it does seem to me that this land and this cell tower, the whole project, has been funded thus far with ratepayer dollars. We've paid for the negotiation process. We've maintained the property. We're going to continue to maintain the property. So there's an investment by the ratepayers. And I just wonder if really dollar for dollar that all that money coming in should go into a general fund that is not tied to ratepayer dollars. Does that make sense?
No.
Well, let me say it a different way then.
You couldn't have maintained the park without maintaining that piece of property. You couldn't have left it blank and said, okay, we're going to maintain everything around it, but we're not going to maintain that piece of property.
Four little spots.
Yeah. But all the time that's gone into the negotiation of the process, all that, it just seems to me that there's something there where the ratepayers have funded this project.
Part of doing business.
It's a pump station.
Okay. Fair enough. Thanks.
So that's no big deal.
Call for the question.
Okay. All those.
No, there's no motion.
I thought we had a motion.
No. My mistake.
You look ready.
No, go ahead. No, I'm
ready to make a motion. We approve resolution 2010-19, general fund.
I'll second that.
Motion been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Okay. Now you're up, Gerald.
All right. It'll take me just a minute to get set up, so if you want to...
Hi, Aaron.
Talk amongst yourselves.
It's a good time to do that.
You guys all know Gerald?
I can't sit for more than an hour without...
And Aaron back there, who's Northern California, president of...
No, not president, no.
Operations of North America or something like that.
Cell towers.
Congratulations on your promotion.
You're the president. We just promoted you.
Oh, yeah.
It's an unfunded mandate, by the way, Aaron, your promotion. Mr. Smart.
I'm not sure where to stand. Maybe right here is fine. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Before I get started, actually, I was going to start with the quarterly report. Can you pull that up first?
Oh, I don't have the quarterly report. I'm sorry. The board has the quarterly report.
Well, I have a summation of both, but I can't do it by memory because it's too darn big. I do have it on a desk.
Did you get permission?
If it's the board's pleasure, let's do the monthly report, the October monthly report first, and I'll go download the quarterly report real quick.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm doing two report summaries tonight. One is on a quarterly report. One is on a monthly report. Now, there's a difference that I want to talk about just for a second, because if I go in here and I start talking about what I'm reporting, you understand that it's data that we gather that we're reporting on. And all data is not the same. Some data, like flow data, we gather on a 24-hour basis. Some data, like laboratory data, if we do it in-house, we can get that right away. But if we send it out, then what happens is we have to wait for that data to come back. and that takes time. And sometimes, like for low-level mercury, the laboratory that we send the data to has to send it out to another lab who has to do the work, QA, QC it, send it back, they QA, QC it, put it in there, and then they give it to us. The point I'm trying to make is that sometimes we don't get the information, the data to report on timely. An example of that might be a regional water quality board correspondence. Okay? It could be mid-November to late November before we get any kind of correspondence about an issue that happened in September. So even in October, I can't tell you what the district or the board or what the regional board had made a decision about because I haven't seen it yet. It's still 5 weeks into the future. And you'll see kind of that as I go through this. So if you have any questions about, well, why is he talking about that and not talking about it back here, it's because I couldn't talk about it back there when I didn't get it till now. Now, I tried to articulate that, but I'm sure that's very confusing.
I think we got it. I think I understand. You can't tell us information you don't have yet. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what I was trying to say.
Okay.
So this is the October report, and I can tell you that in October, when I generated this report, there were no wastewater permit limit violations, there was no water violations, and there was no sanitary sewer overflow. That in October, we participated in what we call the Great California Shakeout. It occurred on the 21st of October, right at 10:21. It's a big deal. California, several million people got involved with this, and it's something that I would encourage all of you to even think about, if for just a moment, because you never know when something could happen like a big earthquake, and you need to be prepared as to what that's going to be like. So our company participates in that, and we go through, and we turn on the radios in the place, we pretend it shakes and stuff, and then we talk about what if, what happens, what are we thinking about? Are we thinking about our families? Are we thinking about the facility? How are we going to go out and check the facilities out? How are we going to get that information back to the people like the town managers and the general managers and so forth? So it was a lot of fun. We've done it several years in a row, and I would encourage you guys to look at it. It's called the Great California Shakeout. We collected 17 triggered NTU samples. That means 17 times the hourly average was over 10 NTU. We go out and collect a sample. It could happen anytime, 3 o'clock in the morning. It could start at 7 in the morning. We collect a sample, and if we can get it over to the laboratory, we preserve it, we take it over to a laboratory. Sometimes we can't get it over there because the lab's closed, so we just put it in the refrigerator. Now we have a really good relationship with the regional board, and they will come back and say, you know, don't worry about it, don't collect samples after 4 o'clock, between 7 and 4, just don't do it. Or they might come back and say, yeah, we know you're doing a lot of work out there, instead of doing it every hour, look at doing it every 2 hours. So there, we have this really good relationship with the regional board that helps us work through the high NTU triggered sampling. We had 20 call-outs, 3 of them were collections call-outs. We had 59 million gallons of wastewater. There was a notice of violation for September that, in fact, I just got the other day. And that notice of violation was for not providing dose information. It's the same notice of violation that we get for the last several months because we're still waiting on getting the information from the ultraviolet disinfection system to be pulled in so we can make that report. Now, I can tell you that as of October 22nd, we put the system in auto, so now we are pulling that dose data in. And the regional board's very happy with that, and I'm hoping that I can convince them that not to send out any more notices because we started at least in October. We'll just see how well I do with that.
Gerald?
You bet.
Go ahead. Probably the same question. Go ahead.
No, probably not. And okay. I'll be interested in see if he knows the answer. Why was it held at 10:21 on 10:21? That's a significant date.
Ooh.
I already told you.
You know, I have a laser. I don't have that
The
answer.
Loma Prieta earthquake happened on 10:21.
See, now I'm from Idaho. It's not fair. It's not a fair question.
I have a more relevant question.
Hey,
not that wasn't relevant. The NOV for September and that we've received for the last several months, does part of that, is part of that because we were going through a UV overhaul and changing out the system?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's all tied in.
That
with
is more relevant.
In 2009, January, the board, the town got a new permit, and immediately it says, thou shalt adhere to the rules here. Well, we hadn't even bought the equipment yet.
Right.
So it took like 6 months to get the equipment, get it installed, get all the bugs worked out, start getting the data. And then they said, well, the permit says anytime 24/7, any second you go outside the NTU, you've got to collect a sample and go out. Well, how many minutes and seconds are there in a day? If you have any kind of a problem with that, then you're going to be doing nothing but traveling back and forth to Stockton grabbing samples. And they realized that and said, well, how about just once every hour? We said, okay, we'll work with that. Now, it gets a lot more complicated, but until we can get the old UV system completely up to speed, where we can put it in auto and trust that it will do the job that it's designed to do, then you have to kind of leave it in manual.
And we've been talking about this.
And if
this
you leave it manual, you can't get auto dose data.
Right.
And we've been talking about this for 10 months, basically. You explained this. Okay, so nothing's changed there. Was there any fine attached to these notice of violations?
I have not seen any fine whatsoever attributed or attached to a non-reporting violation.
That's okay.
The only fine that you'll see that I'm aware of is the minimum mandatory fines, which is relatively new, and that's something that's being to permit limit violations, such as total coliform or something like that, where you actually have a value or a limit that if you exceed, then they get excited about that.
So to reiterate, the town of Discovery Bay has had no fines?
No fines associated with notice of violation for dose data, no.
Thank you.
Now,
okay. Go ahead.
In this, what I was going to do was talk about the quarterly first, because those 3 months happened first, but
right.
we'll work through that.
I'm ready to go.
I'm not going to stop in the middle.
Good for
so
you.
So there was a second violation, and that was for not collecting an NTU.
Yeah.
Now, I'll try to explain the best I can why that happened. You've got this electronic system that's looking at data that it's being provided, and the electronic system will call out or notify an operator if the system or the data is above 10 NTU for more than 15 minutes. Okay, and then the system also calculates every minute what that value is, no matter what it is. If it jumps up to 100, it's going to calculate that into the 60-minute average. We had some NTUs that would spike up and then drop right back down within 1 or 2 minutes. And so the system never called the operator out because it never went 15 full minutes. But each time it went up, it added that over the 60 minutes, and then we were over the hourly average. Now, mm-hmm. the system wasn't designed to call us out at that time, but we purchased a new analog, some more electronics, we added to it. Now we have a digital and an analog system, which does both. So now that we've addressed that, now we explained that to the regional board, it's in the report. They wrote back to the notice of violation, yes, reiterated basically what I had told them, and then never asked us to even respond to it. Hmm. So my guess is that our relationship with the board is working very well as far as this goes. And then we have an ESMR, which is the electronic self-monitoring report. This is a very complicated, a lot of SQL language. There's a lot to this. It's taken a lot of programmers on our part to pull this whole thing together. We've met with the regional board several times, and we received our first full successful ESMR. We need to get two more.
That's awesome.
And then we won't be doing any more paper SMRs. We'll just be doing it all electronic. And it's been a lot of work, but this is a...
And they're going to love you for that, because they've been asking for that for a while, right?
Yes, they really have encouraging us to get this done. But we've done well with that. In collections, there were four additional ARV isolation valves replaced on Highway 4. We had gone out and done a survey, and in that survey we identified some that needed some repair. And we turned that in, and Virgil went out and had those four repaired. Last Monday we went back to each one of those four locations and did a PM on them and flushed them all out in good shape. We cleaned over 13,000, almost 14,000 feet of collection lines. And we installed a level controller, an Endershauser level controller, over in Plant 1. And that's a big deal, because the system we had, it worked, but then it failed. And getting parts is kind of hard, and replacing it, we want to kind of move toward a new system, a better system, more up to date. We got it in there. It works just fine at this point. For the water treatment plants, we supplied 118 million gallons of water to the residents. We had four calls for brown water. Four additional locations were flushed. Three calls for brown water. So we went to four different areas within the community and flushed like a block and a half, and it covers like two or three fire hydrants. I think we were down. We had, I want to say, greater than 20 calls.
It was 21
last month, but I can't quite recall. Maintenance, we spent $2,800 in maintenance. We conducted 403 preventive maintenance or work orders. That equates to about 145 hours. And we removed a big island of cattails out of plant one, which was quite exciting. It took a lot of work. We tried to use some of the equipment that the town has, and as much as our efforts, it didn't quite get to what we needed to, so we rented a backhoe, brought it in, reached out, grabbed it, pulled it out, and it worked just fine. Great. I don't think there was another page. There
wasn't. Okay. What did you do with the rest of the cats?
Well, we kept one, Mr. White.
Hey, Fluffy.
All right, so now we're going to be talking about July, August, and September. And as I just went through, you saw that I added, like, or Polk gave you numbers for a million gallons for that month. Basically, what this does is it takes 3 months' worth of data, adds them all together, and it's not real big news. The biggest difference between a quarterly report and a monthly report is now you go back and pull in all the notices that came in that were late coming in and not current for me to report on in the first place. Okay. So we had no lost time or safety incidents. This is a big deal for us because, as everybody knows, if you get hurt, you got people down, you can't keep up. Momentum is a big deal for us, and you all know that, you know, any football team that, you know, what's the thing they want to do is have good momentum at halftime, and there's a reason for that. So. Having lost time is a big deal, and not having it's even better.
This isn't going to go into a Boise State thing, is it?
Something about we had no effluent permit violations. There were no limit violations. There were no sanitary sewer overflow events. We had two notice of violations, one in July and one in August, and again, this is for that UV data. I don't have September up there because when I wrote this, I didn't have it in yet. So that's why you don't see it up there. The Trojan 3000, the older UV system, was placed in auto October 22nd, and it starts to pull in dosing data. So I immediately got excited, called the regional board and said, hey, guess what, Mark? We got it going. It's working. Keep them informed. Keep that relationship going with them. The Trojan 3000 Plus is also functioning, and Virgil has already got some folks that are moving a sensor over to a central location, so then we have the choice to use either or as opposed to both at the same time. Now, why do you have to do both at the same time? Because the sensors right now are located on the old side, and you have to have the sensors reading data. You can't put all the flow to the new system and try to sensor on the other side when there's no flow going down it. So. We're almost there. Go ahead.
Eventually, there'll be sensors in both units. Is that what you're telling
there,
me?
There will be two sets of sensors, and we'll have to work with Virgil as to where he might want to put the other sensor. Maybe they want them side by side, or they might want to leave one where it's at and permanently affix it there. But the one that's being put in soon is in a central area, so any of the water that comes in before it's channeled down to either side gets picked up. So the one sensor, that's the
so
one.
So you
I
can
really
run one or the other after that point.
Yeah.
Okay. This is
what?
Probably not relevant question. I thought that the new UV unit we put in was not a Trojan unit; it was a different manufacturer.
It is a Trojan 3000 Plus unit.
Okay, my mistake. Go ahead.
We're human. And we missed collecting some samples. And I could go through a long explanation as why it happened and why it didn't happen the first five quarters. But we're human. We missed it. The water board is aware of it. I don't think anything will come of it. There was a iron and manganese sample that had to be collected each quarter, and a cyanide sample. And one of the things that had happened was that the laboratory that was sending us the bottles that we collect these samples had some personnel changes. And when the personnel changes quit, so did that part of the bottles coming to us. We actually recognized that to be a problem in May, about May 22nd, notified the lab and said, hey, make sure that you send those or get the bottles and the chain of custody and everything sent to us, and that we'll, so we don't make this mistake of missing these. And they didn't do that. So they didn't put it in their system. We failed to put it in our system early on when we put all the sampling requirements in. And so because they didn't send it to us, we didn't get notified, it slipped by us.
How often do you test for those three things?
Every quarter.
Okay.
Now, we didn't used to do that, and because Southwest had had, when they did some sampling, they had gotten a hit. They said, the Department of Public Health said, well, here, we want you to sample these two wells. Well, we only decided to sample all the wells. So we sampled everything, sent the data into them, come back, non-detect. It's non-detect for this quarter as well. And what the state will probably do, and in fact, when I called them, they said, well, you're non-detect all the time anyhow, so it's probably not an issue. If you get like three or four in a row that are non-detect, we may just go ahead and reduce it or ask you not to sample. So. We treated
so the second quarter was non-detect. We haven't tested the fourth quarter yet.
Fourth quarter has been tested.
And it was non-detect.
We missed the third quarter.
Okay.
Fourth quarter we've tested.
This is November. This would be the fourth quarter. Okay, I'm with you.
The third quarter we missed. The third quarter we don't have data for, but the fourth quarter we do already. We put it in our job. I put two forms in job. One that tells me that I have to go collect that sample on the first month of each quarter, and then a second notice that comes out the following month that says, did I check to see if the first one was done? So I've tried to do what I can, learning from that mistake.
Appreciate that.
Treated 160 million gallons of wastewater, treated 493 million gallons of water, again, over a three-month period. There were 504 work orders completed for about 266 hours of work. 1,760 work orders for a total of 1,758 hours for the year thus far. And we've cleaned a little over 20,000 feet of line. We responded to 115 call-outs. We had 99 groundwater calls. Now, that sounds like a lot. But if over the weekend you get 50, and that's the weekend, you know, that you're working on, then chances are you're gonna, you know, that's it. It was in a short time frame, but over the whole period there was 99.
That was mostly that Discovery Bay West issue, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Glad to answer any questions.
I've already asked them, but if you guys have any questions.
You were great.
Thanks.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
You say my questions weren't necessary. Anyone? Brian?
No.
David?
Nope.
Ray? Public, Mr. Richardson.
Were those four ARVs that you replaced the same as the one that failed on Clipper Drive?
No, the one we replaced at Clipper Drive is a Clipper Drive. The other four were at four other locations.
No, I meant, was same it the kind. Same kind of a device?
Well, the same, they're air relief valve. Yeah. They may be a Crispin model, but I don't know if they're the exact same kind. But they are all air relief valves. And what was replaced was not the valve, but the bottom isolation valve, because we couldn't get them to stop or open or close. We couldn't tell. The valves were stuck. So we told Virgil, they came out. They shut down the whole sewer line, pulled those off, put new valves on, put the new shutoff valves on, and then the ARVs were replaced back on top, the original ones that were there. Then we came back and went through each one of those and blew them out, which is a preventive maintenance task.
Gerald, how many did you guys check?
Pardon?
How many in total did you check ARVs?
All of them.
Yeah. And that is roughly how many?
22?
I can get the same numbers today.
Yeah.
I actually have a list in my office. There's about
three of them total.
The list that when Virgil sent out and had a company come in and go through all the back, not the what the check valves or had the check valves checked, and he had all those checked. We took that list and went back through it. So however many's in that list is how many we checked. We checked them all, including we've gone back twice now and gone through and looked at some more. In fact, we replaced one today. We took an old one or took one off of the effluent pump system and took it out to the export station and brought the export one in, and we're going to try to put a kit to it because we opened it up, cleaned it up, put it back on, it still leaks. So.
And how often will you recheck them again? I mean, being that this has been an issue now.
Well, contractually, I think we're supposed to go out there once a year. And I think that's normal, what the normal standard is, kind of cleaning a sewer line once every 4 years. If in the contract that you want something to be done more often, we would do it as often as in the contract. Now, it's not a monthly thing.
Now, the reason that I'm asking is being that the one on Clipper is the one that let go and caused a 16,000-gallon spill, mm-hmm. and all of them were the same age?
I can't tell you that.
That's my question. Are they all the same age?
The effluent was probably newer because you guys were discharging into a canal, and now you have a line that feeds all the way out to Old River, and so those all were when you put that effluent line in.
Subsequent to the Clipper Drive failure, the ARV failure on Clipper, Veolia's staff and our staff went out and surveyed each and every ARV in town. Some of them were newer because the community's built at different times. Discovery Bay West, they're newer valves than they are over here. As a result of that survey and that effort, four valves were replaced. And those were done, they were actually pretty much in a row out on Highway 4. There's a toxicity in the soil that causes problems. And the preventive maintenance that we had them do, that Veolia performed for us, to do the inspection and whatever PMs were needed. Some were in need of maybe some repairs or minor modifications, but they didn't require a full replacement. We actually replaced four new ones.
Okay, good, thanks.
Other questions from the public? I don't see any hands. Are there any out there? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Gerald, for your report.
You're very welcome.
Very informative. Aaron, anything to add?
Just that Gerald is the hardest working of the eight PMs that I'm responsible for in Northern California, and I just wanted to express that to the board, and I don't think we could afford to pay him by the hour.
Wow.
He's not kidding.
don't that's objective.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you guys for the report. Appreciate it. And thanks for putting the time in the report. Well done.
You can go at the end if you want.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Okay, so manager's report?
Not yet.
I have two quick, I have one item that's quick and one item that's going to require no lights. So the quick item is I just wanted to let the board and the public know, and Virgil's not here this evening, but he has been selected to be the Grand Marshal on the Discovery Bay holiday parade. So well-deserved honor there. And I have a video that I want to show that was on Channel 7 News, I believe last week, on the Ageria Densa that was done by a reporter. Yeah. It was very well done. And I wish that Mr.
Kyle
was here to see this. And I'll try and contact him and ask him to come in and take a look at it and follow up with some feedback on him. So if you can go ahead and hit those lights again, Jeff.
Yeah, before you start that, I'll just go ahead and hit the lights. But my comment on that is that I'm involved with some things up in Sacramento, and I was surprised how many people were amazed at the length of that we got 3.5 minutes on TV on that thing. This was not a 45-second clip,
right.
And that's big time TV time right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because of all the awareness that the communities tried to bring forward, mm-hmm. the involvement of the supervisor's office with the Assemblyman McNerney's office. And Buchanan's office and all kinds of other people that have brought this awareness and it's worth seeing.
It's a little too dark, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a movie.
Yeah.
What was once simply a popular aquarium plant has now become an invasive aquatic weed that is so pervasive it's threatening to choke off parts of the delta, threatening boaters, swimmers, and wildlife. War Anthony has tonight's Assignment 7 report from Discovery Bay.
And that, what you see, is a Geridenta.
It litters the otherwise pristine bays of Discovery Bay, its long, mangy tentacles rising to the surface, fouling the water at nearly every turn.
It's not pretty.
Called the Geridenta, or Brazilian water weed, it's an invasive weed that many fear could someday take over these waters, one that already surfaces more than 12% of the delta.
Agaria is basically an aquarium plant that was probably released via an accidental aquarium dumping or someone trying to release their aquarium pets to kind of save them and put them in the wild, and they don't realize the impacts to the environment.
Now, with stems rooted as deep as 20 feet, Agaria is not just a nuisance, it's become a danger to delta boaters, swimmers, and the fish and wildlife that depend on these waterways.
It totally changes the fish habitat. Some of it's so crowded that the larger fish can't even swim into that area.
This past summer, in parts of Discovery Bay, the Geridenta became so thick, homeowners paid for a mechanical harvester to come in and cut back the plants. Then they put up special buoys to try to keep it from coming back. In other areas, homeowners have come up with their own methods for fighting back.
This is the first year we've seen it like this, you know, to where now it's really starting to come up. At low tide, you just see it.
Geridenta is so hardy, so pervasive, and insidious that the efforts of individual homeowners provide only temporary relief.
I'm afraid that, you know, when it gets so bad that people are just, it's going to be the Wild Wild West show, and they're going to do whatever they want. You know, they're going to throw chemicals in, bleach in, gas in.
That's why Contra Costa officials have joined with other local and state agencies to form an invasive weed task force.
We need to keep the agencies at the table. We need to work very hard on advocacy, on legislative intent and language to give the Department of Boating and Waterways power and authority to work more comprehensively on the issue. And funding. And funding's critical.
This is the worst year that we've seen as far as the Agaria densa.
Lenora Clark is a longtime Discovery Bay resident who serves as a commissioner for the California Department of Boating and Waterways.
The plan going forward is going to be a combination of trying to harvest a lot of it in the very beginning in April, and then apply a herbicide that has been approved for the area and won't damage the water or the environment.
It's a plan that will require at least $2 to $3 million in funding from a state that may not have it to give. A solution can't come soon enough for those most impacted by the insidious plants. Here in Cabrillo Bay and Discovery Bay, the weeds have grown so thick that in some places, folks have a hard time getting their boats out of their slips.
Yeah, we're stuck.
In fact, the boat we were riding in became entangled in the weeds, a vivid illustration of a problem that's literally growing by the day.
That's not good.
In Discovery Bay, Lori Anthony, ABC 7 News.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. That's a good article. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, I failed to mention Leonora Clark, who is on the Department of Boating and Waterways, who lives right here in Discovery Bay.
Her bay was clean, by the way. Did you notice
that? Yeah. He had to dig real deep to find a little bit for the cameras. But it's to our benefit to have people that are involved in public agencies living here in our community.
We should consider in the future writing a thank you letter.
Anything else?
No, that's all I had this evening.
Legal?
No report.
I'm going to come back for a minute to the to the director's reports. I believe we have a report we missed.
Yeah, thank you. Because it wasn't on the agenda tonight, but I need to make a report, part of the law. I did attend a District 3 code enforcement meeting in September, actually the end of September, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that the code enforcement organization came out and made a presentation to the community?
That's correct.
Good. Hopefully I won't repeat, I'll go through quick. But they are certainly having staffing issues, and code enforcement, for those of you that don't know, are like the CCNRs for our community. How the county administers them is their own rules that they've got, county codes. Byron was pretty simple. We usually get Byron, Discovery Bay, and Knightson. Byron, they've got some loitering issues. They've been working with the sheriff to get rid of that. I know a lot of folks frequent Byron, and they've got some folks that are just loitering in the community. Discovery Bay, members' complaints have been forwarded. Existing complaints that go forward all the time, boat trailers, heavy on Spinnaker and Ravenswood, weekend garage sales. I know something that was driving a lot of, I got a lot of calls during election season, all the signs that went up, and many, many folks here know that those are allowed, but as we've all witnessed, they also attract other signs. So code enforcement was kind of tuning up to make sure that after the election, all the signs were removed. The code enforcement officer has been working with ongoing issues over in Sandy Coves, where they have a lot of signage. That project was constructed with some sign ordinances being very restrictive over there, and a lot of tenants that move in don't realize that. So our code enforcement officer, Patty Cookson, worked with the management over there to try to get keep it clean, and you'll notice, hopefully, the signs have been removed. Not too much going on in Knightson. A couple of issues with RVs, but they've been ongoing, and looks like they're getting on top of that. Again, they came out here, hopefully they gave a PowerPoint, talk about being a little more proactive in the future, getting flyers out, letting folks know what the rules are so that they don't get a notice to comply or an NTC before they know that there's a problem. So anyway, that's my report. Thank you very much.
Where does that go? That way?
Yep, it goes, well, this way.
Thank you. Okay, we have correspondence listed. It's been distributed. Public record requests. Future agenda items for the next meeting. Mark?
I think for discussion and possible action, you may consider no longer accepting cash for staff because it's becoming an issue. We could talk about maybe ways of going maybe to money orders or...
Second that.
Yeah, we probably should go to debit card
or debit
and credit card exception.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, a lot of people are doing it now. And
do you want to, okay, get that on the agenda, and we may have some direction for staff after that point. Yep. Good point. Ray, anything?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Brian?
I'd like to have a discussion about revamping the community center committee.
Good. That'll probably happen in January anyway, what, with a new board?
Right. Well, okay, yeah.
You'd redo committees
that's,
in
that's
January.
That's fine, just... Yeah, well, it was on my mind, so I thought.
Great idea, but January. Thing.
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
Nope.
Okay. I will make a comment, but we probably won't do it at the next meeting, and that is I was contacted by Jason Crapo, who is, I believe, what's his title, David? He's the director of code enforcement.
Yeah.
And he called me.
Resource and conservation.
He's the boss of the two people that were here last month, yeah. Patty and can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, Conrad or something like that.
Yeah,
anyway.
It is Conrad. Yeah.
And so he called me and said, "Hey, listen, we're having budget issues, and the bottom line is that we don't have the staff that we used to have. We would like to come out, and we would like to get priorities from you. What do you want to see us tackle first? What are your priorities? What do you need to do to have Discovery Bay look like you want it to look, and how can we help you with that?" So I suggested to him that we set up a time after the new board comes through, we get to the holiday season, in the first of the year, that he come out and we just put it as a fairly decent agenda item and invite comments from the public. What do you guys think our priorities are? You should be part of the decision. And so coming up after the first of the year, we're going to tackle that whole code enforcement issue in a public way. I thought it was very proactive on his part to call up and say, "We want to get input from you and we want to know how you want us to handle your district."
Well, just a little comment on that. That's going to be very appropriate because I've been doing code enforcement for 14 years out here, and I will no longer be doing it. So that'll be something that the board hopefully can tackle in January, somebody that's interested in doing that. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
you
know, I have a comment, if I can. And
yeah.
The reason I say this is you went by the correspondence, and I didn't get a chance to ask a question about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it's there. Yeah, go ahead. What's up?
Okay, thanks. I see the letter from the county auditor controller, and I see a couple of pages from that in the agenda packet, but not the whole report.
I believe that's all we received
in
the letter.
That's all they sent to us.
Yeah, well, they eventually sent us the entire report because they directed us to look at the those three pages specifically, and the fact that that document has been widely publicized on many, many different websites. We could post it on our website if it's the direction of the board to do so. Just in the sake of saving time, staff time, I only put those pages in that were specifically addressed to us by the auditor controller, those three pages. And that's the reason why.
See, I think that since the directors received a copy of the report and it's in the agenda for discussion and possible action.
The directors did not receive a copy of the report.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it's posted on the county. I believe the county has it posted.
Oh, no. I apologize. I thought the directors got copies of it.
It was addressed to me.
That's fine. Thanks.
Okay. We're hearing no other hot items and desire for discussion, I will call for adjournment.
Thank you, sir.
Nicely adjourned.
Very, very smooth.
Yeah. Good with that gavel, man. Really got quite a. I'll be right back.
Thank you.
It doesn't matter. I've got that
really. Yeah. You got it.
You're more than welcome.
You don't get to sign resolution.
No, I don't. Jeez, man. The only thing I signed is I've been here. It's Burton's letter.
Try to spell your name.
I can remember.
He had to look at it.
I can't remember which town I'm in. I use different languages. What's that? Who did? Oh, he liked that. I'm really glad we did that.
Two of you.
That was a great idea. Thank you. Here you can have this.
Thank you.
Now, where do you see him? Oh, for a meeting.